Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi folks, I'm Andrew Millen and you're all very welcome back to the Celtic Soul Podcast, episode 25. Joining me today on the show will be former professional boxer and Celtic fan Gary Murray. Many of our players have now joined up with the national team squads. Let's hope they all return injury free and that none of them test positive for COVID-19 on their return. And we can push on for the rest of the season after the 3-1 win on Sunday against Motherwell. Celtic will lose out an estimated £30 million for failing to qualify for the Champions League group stages. And with that in mind, I hope we don't sell our best assets until this season is over. Going for the 10 in a row remains in all our minds, and it is still the Holy Grail. The Vultures will circle Celtic Park once again during the transfer window. The tabloid press will keep linking players in and out of the club. Agents will be giving them nuggets of information, some true, but many false, as they try to stir the pot and get the best deal for the player. When we return to competitive action against Ross County up in Dingwall, it looks like there will be fans in the stadium. A small amount of home fans will be allowed in as they are planning on using the game as a test event. I know that the Celtic fans will be missing the early bus trip up from Glasgow for this one. It's always a favourite during the season. The driver would have been told, get the rebs on, and the cargo would be hidden for fear of being stopped by the police and them removing it en route up north. But once again, we'll be watching this one on the TV. But fans back in the stadium is a step in the right direction. Gary Murray is a Coatbridge boy, a Celtic fan and a former professional boxer who almost paid the ultimate price for punching for pay with his life when he suffered brain injuries after his Celtic title fight with Belfast Paddy Gallagher.
Hi Gary, you're very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast. How's life at the moment and how has life in lockdown been for you as we continue to try and stay safe during COVID-19?
How you doing? Life's good, thanks. How's yourself? Good?
I'm not bad, Gary. Just a bit, you know yourself. I just want to go back to see Celtic.
Well, that's it. Well, as watching it on the telly's not the same, is it? Empty stadiums, but hopefully soon enough they'll start letting the fans back in. Everything's just been, every day's just been the same. You know, because I was actually off my work prior to it, so nothing's really changed for me. But I see everybody else getting stressed out big time. I just sort of take it as it comes.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you look too long down the line, like if you had to set in March, I would be chatting to Andrew at the start of September, and we'd still be, you know, in lockdown and still no football fans in football. No one would have believed it, but here we are. We spoke about 2 weeks before lockdown.
Nah.
Obviously, the virus was just starting, but no one knew how serious it would be.
So you decided to go to the other side of the world?
I decided to go to Thailand, yeah. But no, but in fairness now, we got Thailand done and dusted. We got the festival done just before we had to come back. Thank God, because people had travelled from all around the world. It's since then we've come back. It's just been, you know, that really left the town. Now, we can travel around the country now, which isn't too bad, but I think we're like, the bars aren't still open fully. You can go out for a meal and bits and pieces, but
it's not the same, is it? It's not the same in the pubs and whatnot, no. You know.
But hopefully we can get back to some kind of normality soon. Celtic, back to winning ways on Sunday. 3-0 win over Motherwell.
Yeah.
After the Champions League exit during the week, it's been a stop-start season with Ballingolly gate and a few lackluster performances. As a fan, what's your take on what's going on down Paradise Way?
You know, I've got in the back of my mind that, like, I think the likes of the crowd's not been there really well be affecting the players. I think about, like, Celtic's great, like, you know, recent history at home in Europe, and you take that away, but as you take the fans out, it's the fans that make it a hard place to come to get a victory. And if they're not there every week playing, you know, I do think that Celtic's form will dip because of it. I do think that, like, at Celtic Park, like, the crowd seem to, they're like an extra man, especially in the big European games.
There's been a lot of upheaval, we'd say, because of the COVID, but, you know, these players are, you know, they're well looked after. There's no one better looked after than professional footballers.
Oh, definitely, yep, 100%. I couldn't agree more with you, but I genuinely do think, like, you're more say they're the best, all the best players in the world. It's the most intimidating place to come play football, Parkhead. And I honestly do think if it were games were behind closed doors, like, I don't think for a second Celtic would beat the likes of Barcelona on and off, you know what I mean? Or, like, AC Milan, I think, you know, I think we'd be on the wrong side of a good doing for a lot of the fans there. But it's all laughs, buts and maybes, isn't it? It was good to see him in the game the other day. I was screaming for a jetty, come on. See, just listen to Big Hartson at half time, and he made a great point. He's like, even just get a striker will just get in the box, and you just stand still and play off the players. So I just sort of thought all the players were all, like, you know, down the channels and, you know, not playing without a recognised striker. It's at home, you know, you want to have somebody up there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was certainly a talking point, especially on social media, before both games, the European game when he didn't play a striker up front, and then on Sunday again, people were thinking, you know, he was just been stubborn. But, like, the game did change when he brought on, firstly, Paddy, and then when he brought on Ayeti. Like, two strikers up front just made it so different. And then it was great to see Frimpong coming off the bench as well. Because
yeah, he done well, that boy, in the right.
He just added something. And hopefully, going forward, because when he came back from Dubai, he went with two up front, with Griffiths and Eddie. And hopefully now he's seeing that that's the winning formula. So it's not a lot between us and Rangers. I know, like, if we have two games in hand, but there's 6 points between us. If we win the games, we're level. And hopefully we'll be level going in against them, because that, like, it's a massive season, the 10 in a row.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's one of the ones. And every game's a cup final. But see, to be fair, it's like it's been a while since you've been this excited about, you know, personally, like, about a season. Because you're like, right, this is the season that needs to happen. Every game is like a cup final. Instead of just being like monotonous going through it. Obviously, you might see your team win, but it's like when you're running all the time and the threat is, it's there, but it's not there. You know, you always want to beat them. You always want to get them a doing, but when the challenge and they're not really on your coattails, it's not the same. Whereas now, it's, you know, it's exciting again.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong, I'd still rather be 20 points ahead. you know how it is.
Yeah, but, like, you know, you're now watching the Rangers result now. People say, oh no, I don't care about them. Everyone's watching the results.
I don't know. I didn't see some luck here about it.
And you look, even yesterday, Aberdeen and Hibs, you're looking to see, you know, who can take points off.
I think over the course of this full season, I think that, you know, I mean, they will drop points, but it's whether Celtic can maintain what they've had the last few years. Like, if Celtic go on a good run of form, it's seen whether Rangers can sustain it over a season. This Celtic team have proved they can. I know there's been a few changes in that, but they've proved that they can sustain it. But it'll be interesting anyway.
Well, hopefully they can keep all the players now and that no one goes out in the transfer window, because we're always going to be...
I know, but it's like that. The Champions League thing, you're always thinking, worrying, there's going to be more...
A balance the books exercise.
Well, even, like, I know, like, say, everybody's thinking about them being off, everybody being off work and things like that, but financially it must be hitting the, like, say, football teams as well. They're not getting, obviously, I think most people are paying up the season tickets. I'm not a season ticket holder anymore, but I would assume that there must be some revenue that they're losing, but not having the...
I would imagine through hospitality and you know, catering and pies, and they all make money. I was reading today that, you know, it'd be 30 million they would have made by qualifying for the Champions League group stages. So that's gone now. And, you know, history shows us that Peter Lowell will balance the books with a big sale. And hopefully it's not Eddie.
But that's what I was going to say there. It's almost a stick on, isn't it? It's, I think knowing that they've got, like, say, like Griffiths, I think, you know, he knows how to find the back of the net and, like, domestically. And I think that that's their sort of, you know, the safety net. They'll believe they'll still be able to get 10 in a row by selling one of the players, which is a very, very risky thing to do, because if they do that and they don't get, and it doesn't happen, you know, the fans will turn on the board big time.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Just before we move on, Gary, have you been watching any of the boxing behind closed doors?
I've seen a few of them. Again, I haven't been as, when I grew up, it was just transfixed Celtic football, and everything, boxing, it was boxing. And since I've had this injury, man, it's just been, you know, just trying to survive. I've not had, you know, it's not as big, massive a thing in my life, but it's obviously, as I say, now it's just trying to get all my hands sorted with my employment. But I watched the scene, like, Eddie Hearn's been having a couple of shows out in his back garden.
Tell you, want to get some back gardens.
Some fucking hoose in it. Bigger hoose than mine, anyway.
Tell you, one thing. The dressing rooms, I'd say, was bigger than my house. I watched a couple of them, but again, it's entertaining, but it reminds me of, you know, like watching a good spar in a gym. I think boxing can, I'm not saying it can survive behind closed doors, but it's a different thing than football.
Obviously, like, that's the thing that people don't understand, that, like, the best fights people don't see. The best fights happen in the gym, because the guys are dehydrated, they're not, you know, cutting weight. They're at their best, and they're in the gym. And they might have bigger gloves on, but, you know, I've seen some great, you know, gym wars, as they call them. But I don't think that fighters are ever at their best when they're in a fight. See, because there's this, unless they've got the best strength and conditioning nutritionists and things like that, you see them and they're, like, gone the day before the fight, to the way in, and then I don't think they fully recover in order to put on the best version of themselves, you know.
But yeah, I don't think people realise as well, when a boxer's cutting weight, how hard it is, because I remember after a Rangers match a couple of years ago, and Scotty Cardle was preparing for a fight, and he had one black coffee with us. We had a couple of pints. He had one black coffee, and then he had to leave to go home because he had a certain amount of food he needed to eat. You put yourself through some torture, really, isn't it?
Not anymore. I've been making up for it since. since I woke up out of the coma, I think I've doubled my body weight. So I've beat anorexia. I mean, I've won my world title, but I beat anorexia.
Okay, Gary, now you're a Celtic fan. I know you were a pro boxer, but can you take us back to a young Gary Murray in Coatbridge before you started boxing? You know, was it football? Was it going to see Celtic? What was it like back in those formative years?
It was obviously going to, St. Timothy's local primary school. You know, everybody was always just Celtic playing football. But my mum, we were talking about this the other day, actually, she would never ever, she wouldn't buy me a Celtic strip. She didn't want me having been in, like, Celtic arena football or anything. So made my first Holy Communion. I bought my first Celtic strip myself. But my dad, being a fly man, because he had to go in and buy it, The only way I could buy a Celtic strip was if I bought him one as well. So my complete communion money gets spent on buying my dad a Celtic strip, buying myself one. And I was like, I don't care, I want it. So I got that, and that, obviously, that was the top that they won in the 95 Cup final. So I was at that game, and it's funny, actually, I was at that game, and I just made my communion, and I had my kilt on at the game. And it turns out, as it transpires, like 20-odd years later, that my wife was at the game as well. But she was in the Airdrie. she's originally from Airdrie. She says, oh, I was a big Diamond fan. I was like, what? I literally found this out like 6 months ago at the wedding when that happened, if I knew that.
I certainly have to bring that up the next more than 90 minutes dinner dance to see
it. Oh, exactly. I don't know. That's what she says. She says, I was a glory hunter and started supporting Celtic when she's about a 10-year-old.
Brilliant. So that was, you remember going back as far as 95, FC Palmick's day winning that?
I remember before then, I was at the cup final in 94, Raith Rovers. I was at that game at Ibrox.
Good news.
Not exactly, mate. That's why I just skimmed over it. I'd been going to the games. I think I went to the games the last season at the Old Park Kid, and then went for the season at Hampden, and then we got the season ticket, and I think it was 96. I think with the stadium opened, it was 95, 96. And I had that until I had to move away for work. And when I moved away for work, I wanted to keep my ticket on, but my dad cancelled it because it was part of like one of the buses. And he's like, okay, just cancel Gary's ticket. I would still have it to this day if he had cancelled it. What can you do?
So hold your father responsible for
it. I do, definitely.
Now you said you moved away for work there, Gary. That's when you started boxing, wasn't it?
It was, I was, I worked down, like, I worked in electricity pylons, so basically you work wherever the work is, so maybe pylons in Newcastle, London, you know, but the jobs last maybe about 6 months, and then you have to move on, or 3 months, and you have to move on, so I was always moving about at different places, and I ended up in Norwich for a spell, and, you know, it's like the sort of work, all the boys working away, it's always, you work for like 10 hours and then you're in the pub for about 10 hours and then you get a 4 hour skip and then it's the same thing all over. And I was doing it and I was like, I need to do something else. So I just started going to the boxing gym and I just started doing like, I had boxed as a kid, like to learn the basics, but I'd never really fought. And they put us in a fight, like a week collar fight. And I just went for there. And then after I had a couple in England and then, believe it or not, the next job that we could put on was in Glasgow, so I could actually stay at home. So then I got a gym local, and then it just sort of took off from there.
So you had a couple of unlicensed fights before you turned pro?
Oh, no, yeah. When I moved to Scotland, I then continued fighting unlicensed, but see, the likes now you get a lot of the shows are terrible, and they're like, don't be wrong, I fought in my first year terrible shows myself, but I like to think that in doing that, I always fought like the better opponents that were out there. You know, guys that like were ex-professionals that couldn't get a professional license because for whatever reason, or you know, they were ex-pros or they were like top amateurs that you know that had just decided they wanted to do this instead because they were getting to fight on, you know, fighting on big nights like hotels, you know, like big shows. Even though they're not, like, you know, a lot of the amateur shows are just in like more like social clubs and things like that. So I done that for up until I made my debut, pro debut in 2014. So I've done that for maybe 2 years, and then I had my pro debut.
And how did Tone and Pro come about?
It was basically we went over the sort of unlicensed sort of like team that I was part of. We went out to Macklin's gym, Marbella, out in Spain. I think we were the first team to actually go out there, and I remember just thinking about like seeing all the pros in there and the way it was my sparring and. I knew myself, I was like, I'm going to regret it the rest of my life if I don't. So I just said to my then trainer, like, I'm doing it. I says, I just need to know for myself. Because I was sparring regularly with the top amateurs, doing all right. I says, okay, I'm just going to go for it. And he's like, all right, sorry. So I came home, and it took nearly a year from that date to go through all the tests that they wanted. Because they wanted to make sure you're a competent boxer, because I didn't have the relevant sort of amateur pedigree that they would just grant you a license straight away. So I had loads of hurdles to go over to actually get my license. So and that time, it just gave me more time to get ready. So that's what I came about.
And then you went in an unbeaten run. Was it 13 fights unbeaten or was it 12?
No, it was 12. It was 12. But see, to be fair, on it, this is what I'm saying. Like when I was fighting unlicensed, I would go and fight like better fight. I fought better fighters when I was unlicensed, believe it or not. And I don't get wrong. I had a couple of scares in the pros as well. But I managed to come back and win. But a lot of the fights, it's just a money-making exercise for you know, for other people. It's not, you're not really in deep. And then you're going for there and you're going against Paddy Gallagher, Commonwealth Gold medalist, you know what I mean? But I learned an experience, to say the least.
Yeah, you mentioned Paddy Gallagher there. That was the big fight. You were underdog on the night. And we chatted about it just a couple of weeks before the fight. You were a guest at Sellegay M and Malone's before one of the games. Can you take us back to the build-up to that fight and take the listeners down into the dressing room and then into the ring? Because it was a belter of a fight before you suffered the technical knockout.
Yeah, and the lead-up to the fight, you know, I don't want any excuses here. At the end of the day, the buck stops with me. It was me that got in the ring and got done, whatever. But like in the lead up to the fight, things weren't perfect. But on the night, as I said to you before, I don't have any actual memory of the fight. I remember being in the changing room before it. I remember my manager coming in, and my big mate Ian. Ian and Sandy had come in, and I was with my trainer Peter and Pat. And that is the last thing I can remember. I can't remember walking to the ring. I can't remember being in the ring. I remember waking up in the hospital and thinking that I thought I'd been on the drink and fucking done something because I had no memory. I thought I'd been drunk and just woke up and was like, well, what have I done? Not knowing. And then obviously my wife then broke it to me that I had been in a fight. I'd been boxing, but I boxed Paddy Gallagher. And I was like, no recollection of any. And I think over the, you know, last, it's coming up 3 years. It's coming up 3 years next month. In a month's time, it'll be 3 years. And, you know, I've still, every now and again, things are coming back a wee bit clearer, you know, than what they did previous.
Have you watched the fight back?
Nah, because what happened was, you know, I was promised that it was going to be a TV fight. That was the first thing. And then I called the bluff and I said, well, what, I've got a promoter that's, I've got a sponsor that wants to see the logo on the telly. And she goes, we can't guarantee, we can't 100% guarantee that 99.9% you're going to be a TV fight. So I knew then that I was just getting lied to. Well, that's apparently it happened. The fight ended up coming at like after midnight. I think, as I say, I can't even remember like prior to that, like being in the change room thinking, oh, I should be out by now. And it's not, because apparently it was a TV fight. And then I'll be perfectly honest, I think I was just fucking lied to, like, the whole way through.
Do you remember the press conferences and stuff like that?
Oh, no, I remember them. Remember me and Paddy and that as well. And, you know, even, he's a hard guy to dislike, even after he's given your head in. No, I mean, he's, even then, you know, I mean, I was like, see, he's sound, because we're talking away, you know what I mean, before we even get in there. But, my recollection is up to the changing room. And then after that, just none.
And was the fact that you had to cut weight, dehydration, what was there any fact, have you been told about any factors of why you collapsed into a coma?
At the point, I mean, I think a lot of it's to do with it as well. I never had the courage to quit my job and chase it full time because I had like mortgage to pay and I had a flat that I rented out and I was always having to have your money in case that somebody was renting that, and I never ever I worked full time, you know what I mean, and it was I think that's maybe cost me, because I actually took time off work prior to that fight, but I didn't have a camp set up, I didn't have any routine, you know, I just done everything. I went down to Birmingham 3 times myself to get sparring. Just turned up at the gym sparring, like, say, you know, Frankie Gavin, but he's like Big Gavin's a southpaw, you know, he's not. And like a couple of other boys that John Peck had. But again, I was down myself and nobody there in my corner. And then I come up the road and I tried, as you say, like, so you try to manage your weight. I sparred Calvin McCord. Calvin McCord now fights, I think he fights at lightweight. And he battered me in my last spar. And then I remember just being, you know, like disheartened and all that, getting into it. But at the end of the year, I remember training and just being, my mindset was, look, I knew a lot of things when they right in the background, but I was like, I'll be able to look myself in the mirror after this. I said, I don't know about a lot of other people, but I never for a second thought what was going to happen to me, you know, what happened to me was going to happen, you know.
Were you getting well paid for that fight?
No, not enough to fucking be, to end up disabled. You know what I mean? I think I got like £2,500 or something. And then I got, I think there was a thing with the board paid like £500. But bear in mind, you know, they're taking off loads and loads of hours of work. And, you know what I mean? I wasn't doing it for the money. I was doing it because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to progress. But it did, you know what I mean? It wasn't easy.
You mentioned there about it wasn't worth what happened to you. So you're in a coma, and your recollection of coming around in the hospital, you said, was like you were out on the night on the drink.
Yep.
So you remember up to the dressing room of the fight.
Yeah.
And then You wake up in hospital.
Woke up in hospital, not sure what had happened. I couldn't even then think what I had done last. I couldn't think when I was lying in the hospital, think, all right, 1 minute I was in the changing room, and then now when I woke up, I was just like, God, what have I done? What have I done? Where have I been? What, you know, thinking that I'd been out partying or whatever. And my girlfriend at the time, she was like, nah, I says, oh, I've been a idiot, and I've been out drinking, and I've been in bother. And she says, ah, you've been fighting, but it was in a boxing ring, you fought Paddy Gallagher. But at the time, when I was lying there, I was disappointed in myself because I thought that I was actually training still to fight Paddy Gallagher, and I'd been out drinking when I should have been training. It was a weird sort of experience.
And how long were you unconscious for?
I don't know. I was about a fortnight. I think I was out here, or somehow along the lines.
It must be so hard on your wife and family.
10 days. Oh no, right. Well, I think they were. My wife's been strong for it all. My best man, my wedding, his missus, my wife, my mum and dad, my family were all close. And to be honest, they get some laugh. They said it was some laugh, and it was see after I woke up, and it was delirious. I thought I was in Ibiza when I was on holiday, and I kept saying, and so when they're coming out with the food for like your dinner and all that, I was sitting talking to my brother-in-law, and I kept saying to him, oh, you should get your dad to come out here. This is fucking brilliant. This all-inclusive is magic. And I had tried to get up and go. I went out a walk, and I got up, and the first couple of days I couldn't walk, but I got up one day, and I went to go to the toilet, and I was in intensive care, I shouldn't have been, but so they put like a hang around my wrist, and it was like a tag, but this tag was like so that if you walk by these sensors, an alarm goes off, so they know that they go and get you and put you back into bed. But I thought this tag was my all-inclusive wristband. So I was clicking my hand to the nurses, like, can I get a drink yet? No.
So you were asking the nurses for a drink?
I was like, is the bar open yet?
I'm sorry for laughing, this is serious.
I kept seeing that, and I said that all the doctor was walking by, apparently. This is all stories I can tell about. The doctor was walking by his clipboard, and I was just lying in bed, and I'm like, I hang him on a sunbed at the pool. I was saying to them all, like, I've not seen that cunt in the pool all week. Okay, no, it's mental, but...
Unbelievable. And listen, how long were you in hospital then for overall?
Oh, it was a long time. We'd said I was going to go to, out of the intensive care, I was going to go to a general ward in the Monklands, which is a local hospital to me, because it happened in Edinburgh. But they were going to transfer me to the local hospital in the Monklands. But, no harm to the Monklands. But my mum works there. My mum knows. She's like, no, because he gets put in there, he'll just rot. And I've got to take my hats off to my management at the time. You know, like, I think it was MTK. They paid to get me into like a brain injury specialist place. And I went there. And that, see, to be honest, that was the best thing that could happen to me, because it gave me a bit of perspective. I was dead angry and upset. I couldn't box again. I was told I wasn't allowed to box again. But I was then with people that were younger than me, being in car accidents that were never going to walk again. You know, people with real proper brain injuries that, you know, kind of gave us a sense of perspective. Whereas, you know, I mean, I've not really got much to moan about.
Well, my memory of that night was, I'm almost sure I was coming back from an Ireland match in the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. And when I was coming down the road, I messaged you to see how the fight went. And I says, it must be a pageant, right? Because I couldn't get the internet. So I went back out, had a couple of points. And then it was only the next morning. And I went on to get the result that I found out that you were in hospital. And then obviously couldn't contact you. But it was, you're worried because I'm a big boxing fan, but I know there's always casualties. So as you said there, your management put you into a private hospital for rehab.
Yeah, and I've just got to thank them for it, because like my sort of injury, even now, still like, people don't get it because I don't have any outward symptoms. Like, see, because I'm, see if I was like You know, if I was sitting drilling, or you know, like, you know what I mean, I couldn't speak, or I couldn't hold a conversation, people would know then, or maybe he's got a brain injury. But like in there, when I went in, I actually seen people that have these sort of outwardly sort of like you can tell basically that they're out. And as I say, it gave me some sense of perspective, you know. And I went through all the, they had all talked like sort of psychologists and, you know, different people that work with, you know, like even physiotherapists, you know, all the different, and like all the things they do like for your cognition, and you know, like your problem solving things and that, just try to get your brain back, get some sort of life back to it, you know.
And how hard was it mentally to deal with?
See, to be honest, at the time, I was in the best hands. It's been more so since it's all died down and it's all, you know, I mean, it's old news. Everybody thinks, oh, no, it's fine now. It's been the things that's been on with my work, absolute nightmare. It's been harder dealing with what's happened with my work over the last year than what it had been, you know, in the hospital. Because in the hospital, I had the best people looking after me. And then when I come home, you know, I was fine because I'm my family and my close friends coming to see me every now and again. And it's after all that, it gets difficult, you know what I mean? When people go, right, he's okay now, and you go out into the... But in saying that, you know, I was back at work for over a year, and I was doing fine. It was the massive changes in the job, but it became too much for, like, I didn't have the capacity to deal with what they were looking for out of me, you know?
So, Gary, just try to let the listeners in, because it's the first person I've ever interviewed that has had a brain injury. You said you didn't remember anything from the dressing room till you woke up and then you thought you were in a beta, and, you know, which I can think of most places to be.
That's right?
But you said things comes back to you, and like, do you remember everything before the fight now?
Yeah.
So that's the only thing that's missing, is it?
Yeah. I swear, Andrew, it's actually funny that you've got in touch with me. I know I've probably said to you every time I've seen you, I've been like, oh, my memories, my thing is getting better. It's the best I've been since injury. Every time, like, but I swear to God, see the last six weeks, I've been, you know, I mean, the best by a country mile, like. You know, my wife's been keeping me right with a lot of the things that's going on with my work. She's pretty intelligent. I'm finding myself remembering things that she's not remembered, you know. Yeah. And even she's noticed a lot of... It's hard to explain to people what that is. It's like, you know everything, but it's putting things, you know, one after the other. And it's like, if I was to drive from here to the pub, if I was right here from the pub, I know what the pub is in my mind. I know I can visualise it in my head, but then... Getting in my car, now I'm fine, but then it's like getting into my car, I'd be like, how did I get there? I know that I drive to the end of the road, and then when I get to the end of the road, then I'd be like, all right, then I go here. But I couldn't put it, you know what I mean? I couldn't visualise it in my own head that I go there. So if I was to give the directions to somebody, I wouldn't be able to just reiterate it. I just had to react to every time I turned around, I'd be like, off here, I turn left. And then when I get to that bit, I'd be like, oh, I'm here, right? To hear a turn right. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't have and I feel as if things are just like sort of, it's like a bone healing. Do you know what I mean? It's like everyone's starting to knit together again. I'm starting to think, the way I describe it is like I'd always remember things like on a sort of macro scale. I'd be able to remember that I was like at the Celtic dances with, like, say yourself and Joe Miller, and that was there. But I wouldn't be able to tell you what we actually talked about. Because that was no like that thing about like the details. Whereas now, I'm better with things like that now. Like I remember where I've been, what I've done, and I can actually remember the discussions and the sort of more, you know, minor things. I can remember things more in detail now. And
I remember the following time we were in Malone's, and you were still very ill in hospital. I remember saying to the because we have different people come in every time, depending on who we're interviewing. But we have a hardcore as well that would be there, that would get the bus, the McConnell's bus up to the game. So we'd have a hardcore that would be in. And I remember saying, you know, you were probably in 2 weeks before the fight, and this was maybe a week after the fight. And I said, you know, Gary's in, and we're all praying for him, and you know, he's fighting, and as soon as he gets well, we're going to have him back, you know, in for an interview. And then you did come in for an interview, and I remember the reaction, you know, from the regulars there. But you did tell me that night, you know, you, or that morning, you were saying, you know, your memory wasn't just, it wasn't just up to scratch. And your wife was great because we chatted before we went on, and she, you know, she was brilliant, you know, kind of reminding you and prompting you and that. But it was just great to have you back that time. And I also thank you because since then you've supported all our charity dinners, and I appreciate you turning up. And
well, not at all. It's, you know, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be invited along. You know, it's they're good. It's good charities that you, you know, I mean, good work that they do.
Ah, they do indeed. Yeah. Life after boxing, you know, boxing's a tough sport. You've been through the mill. Are you going to stay involved with the sport, or are you still involved with it?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm at the moment. I'm doing like helping people with their boxing, that want to learn boxing and things like that. But I'm not involved. I've got my pro trainer's badge and things like that. I've got all that. But at the moment, I'm not. But I'm definitely 100% in my mind. I'm not finished. I'm not finished in boxing. But again, that might be something to do with injury. That now it's just my, you know, I mean, my employment status. That's the main thing right now. You know, I've got to look after myself and my wife, pay the bills, and you know, I've always had like two or three jobs. Even when I was boxing, I worked on the pylons, and I used to do deliveries, and I bought a box all the time. Do you know what I mean? It was a recipe for disaster. But and I go for that now to like, I'm saying I'm willing to go back to work, and my work aren't really wanting me back. So we're going to. We'll see what conclusion comes of that, but it is what it is. It's got to crack on.
Yeah, so now the future is you want to go back walking, you want to stay involved in the sport.
Yeah, I want to stay involved, but I think it'll be a bit down the line. You know, I want to get to a stage where I've got my employment is looking a bit better, my employment status is a bit better, but then I can actually start to look at extracurricular things, because there's no money in boxing. There's no money unless you're, you know, as I say, I told you, you know, I think I got for that fight with Paddy Gallagher, you know, guy top 10 in the UK. So it's pennies in comparison to what you put in. And then the fighters get pennies, and then as a trainer, you get 10% of their pennies. So, you know, I mean, it's not sustainable as a job. You know, hopefully I can get things sorted with my job, and then you know, as soon as I've done that and I've got a bit of security behind me, I'm definitely want to get back involved in boxing.
Well, Gary, you've grafted all your life, you know, two jobs and boxing. It's some going, and I just hope everything pans out for you in the future, because it's certainly an inspirational story of how you come back. You know,
it's not done yet, mate. It's not done yet.
You come back, no, but it is. Every time I see you looking better and...
I'm fatter.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
say that. You know, I think that's the last
one. Do you know that's actually? I know now I'm using it as an excuse, but at the literally say at the time I was putting on loads of weight because see if my memory was that bad that I would go around to my mum's and my mum would be like, "Have you had dinner tonight?" And I'd be like, "I don't know." So I would have had dinner and then I would have gone around and I'd had another one. I didn't have a clue. So you know. That's been my excuse for a couple of years now, and it's wearing thin, I think, with a few folks, so I'm going to need to start losing a few pounds.
I think so. Gary, before we finish up, how do you see the rest of the season panning out for Celtic? Are we going to do the 10?
I pray we do. I do believe we will, because I think boys are starting to find a bit of form now, and I think maybe Lennon will see you need to play. You know, I mean, you just signed a striker, and I don't know if he's meeting on a jetty getting up to match speed or whatever. And then hopefully we get, you know, like say Griffiths, Edward, whoever, you know, it's going to be there. I think they could go on a decent run domestically. You know, I mean, obviously there's a Europa League now, isn't it? I think domestically they've got on a good run. We've got every chance. You know what I mean? We've got players that can put the ball in the net when they're fit, and that's what we need to hold on to.
Well, Gary, it's been a pleasure to chat again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
As it always is. And I'd just like to thank you for bearing your Celtic soul with us.
Oh, all right, no bother, Tommy.
Well, hopefully, Gary, the next time we're talking is in Glasgow and we can have a pint.
Pint or ten.
Look after yourself and we'll talk again soon.
Good man, thanks a lot. See you after me. Cheers.
I think Gary's interview highlights that boxing is not all about glitz and glamour. Gary's comeback from his brain injuries is an incredible story, and we wish him all the best and look forward to catching up with him again. Thank you very much for listening. Special thanks again to Ronan McQuillan for producing the show, making the coffee, and running around all day looking after me. Only joking, he's a true professional. Folks, if you like what we're doing and you would like to support us, visit CelticFanzine.com where you can donate, subscribe, buy or become a member for the price of a pint. Thanks to everyone who has supported us so far. We really appreciate the support. Don't forget to download our new app. It's free and you will then have access to all our podcasts, articles, daily news, videos and info on upcoming events, the fanzine and our online shop, all at the touch of a button on your phone or tablet. You can also sign up for our newsletter. If your business or Celtic Supporters Club would like to sponsor the podcast, please get in contact. You can email us at info@celticfanzine.com. You can also contact us through the website or message us on social media. To the listeners, keep the comments coming in and let us know what guests you would like us to get onto the show. And if you have a story to tell, we'd love to hear it. We are taking our own international break and the next podcast, episode 26, will be on Friday the 11th of September. I'll be cheering on the boys in green against Bulgaria and Finland, but there'll be no buses to run or no airports to hang around. It's back onto the sofa to watch on TV. Enjoy the international break, folks. We will be walking away here on the fanzine and the website. And once again, I thank you all for listening. Stay tuned, stay safe, and keep the faith.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.